Welcome to Positive Personal Power with hope, aspiration, and encouragement. Our goal is to build and enhance people's confidence and strength to handle life's challenges. Now, let me introduce you to your host, Nathaniel Skula.
Okay. All righty. So, welcome. I am very happy, actually, because not only am I joined by Nadia Russo, founder, CEO of Purpose Forward Marketing Agency, Alter New Media, but we are joined by Dr. Blake Schusterman. Hope I pronounced your name right.
Perfect.
Good. I learned that from Stanley Tucci. He does that a lot. He goes like this. And you are South Carolina kidney doctor on a mission to change your butts with your delicious and modern recipes. And I might like to add that I have looked at your website and it did make me hungry.
I'm glad to hear that. That's good.
Well, that's a good thing. We all want to be hungry for healthier stuff as opposed to the bad stuff.
Yes, and it's very difficult. I see all these cakes and ice creams everywhere, and I do like a nice cake. But anyhow, let's get down to it. Tell us about you, Blake. Who are you, and what drives you to do what you do?
It's kind of a big question, Nat, to start off.
We'll go macro, and then we'll whittle it down, maybe.
Serious.
So I am a kidney doctor, as you said, in Greenville, South Carolina, which is in the southeastern part of the United States. And I've been here for about 11 years. And that's my day job, taking care of people with kidney disease, whether they're at risk for kidney disease or they can even have kidney failure where their kidneys fail completely. So my day job is working as a kidney doctor. And then I've started on the side a YouTube channel and a website where my goal is to get people to eat healthier food, because what you eat has such a tremendous impact on your overall health and your kidney health even more. Absolutely. So that's kind of who I am. What drives me? I could think I could talk forever about what drives me.
What drives you? Come on, tell us a few things.
So, you know, I think, if you get down to it, you know, from as you get older in life, different things drive you along the way. So, you know, you start off, I'm a firstborn child. I am driven, type A personality. What drives me is to succeed in whatever I'm doing. And, you know, as you go through life, maybe your drive isn't so much to succeed, and then you kind of want to support your family a little bit, and then you want to take care of your patients and make sure what you're doing in life has a positive outcome on people. And I think by this time in my life, I kind of balance all three of those things as what drives me in my day-to-day life.
Fantastic.
I mean, a big part of what you do is having this awesome platform, the Cooking Doc, which is obviously, you know, you designed it to really encourage people to eat healthier, to learn how to enjoy food without, you know, forsaking taste, which is a big concern. Would you say, what was the impetus for that? Was it a patient of yours that was kind of, or maybe several, going on about how they cannot give up some of their, like, bad foods? Like, what started this movement and this platform? What was the impetus?
That was certainly part of it, Nadia, coming down to South Carolina, and a lot of people don't know what healthy food is, and they don't know how food affects what they eat. I'm sorry, how food affects their health overall. And people really do not want to eat food that doesn't taste good. So if you have food that is healthy but doesn't taste good, nobody's going to jump right in and eat that because they think it will be better for their health. So you have to make the healthy food taste good and live up to these kind of Southern standards, or else people won't go that direction. So part of it is exactly what you said, really trying to get people to eat healthier food. And then another part of it was seeing that down here in South Carolina, physicians and the medical establishment wasn't necessarily providing a good example for people on what to eat. So whether or not that's food delivered to people in the hospital that's totally unhealthy, or at the dialysis centers looking and seeing candy and chips and soda served
that's
to the
patient.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, how can we expect people to eat healthy food and know what's healthy if we're serving them things that don't fit in those categories?
Yeah.
Mixed messages.
Totally mixed messages.
Nat, I don't know if you know this, but my dad actually has kidney disease. So obviously I was like, oh my gosh, like this is somebody that espouses the advice that my father has started to adopt. You know, he's always been pretty healthy, but there were still some issues, you know, too much cheese, too much red wine, you know, different things. And Blake could go into the issues of a high potassium diet here, but that would just be going off to sidebar. But
yeah.
He recently had a medical appointment, and he was very pleased to learn that he's practically kidney disease free because of eating so well, following a really healthy diet. So it does work, but of course, you know, it's subjective as well because everyone has a different situation. So, you know, do you get some resistance from your patients when you make these suggestions? Are they kind of like, oh, this is going to be gross. Like, I'll never be able to change.
I think it depends. I certainly get people that say I can't eat anything other than what I've been raised on. But more than that, I think I get people that say, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I would love to eat in a way that benefits my health. But then, you know, I see them 3 or 6 months later and basically nothing has changed. I think that's more common than anything. People want to do it, but it's really hard if you don't have the tools to succeed.
Can I jump in on that? Do you think that it's a lot to do with their environment and not just what they've been brought up on, but actually the people around them?
Those people that have like the really severe morbid obesity, I mean, that's like, that's a whole different side, I think. And there definitely is more than just that one person, you know, going overboard with what they're eating. I think environment plays a huge role. But it's often like, you know, your friends and your family and what's on TV, you're bombarded with advertisements of unhealthy food. Mm-hmm. I drove down the road in one of these rural offices that I work at. I work at a rural office and then there's a dialysis clinic. And I drove those 2 miles and I counted. And there were 60 fast food options along the side of the highway in those 2 miles. And I think just being in that situation where you can have easy access to unhealthy food, or at the grocery store, thousands of unhealthy items, processed foods just right in your face, it's really hard to find the right things to eat, especially if those are the cheap ones.
Shoot, I just had a Big Mac today.
Did you really?
Do you know what? I really enjoyed it. I haven't had a Big Mac for months, yeah, and it was delicious, seriously.
I haven't had a Big Mac in years.
Imagine the fast food being a little less, bad in Europe. I mean, I remember when I was in Spain and, like, I went into a McDonald's and then a Starbucks and everything was much more, like, artisanal and it didn't seem like it was loaded with preservatives and stuff. I mean, who knows? But, I mean,
That's a Big Mac, Nadia.
It was good, really. This Big Mac. It's the mayonnaise, yeah? And the gherkins. I was just talking about it. It's like the way the cheese, it's the texture of the cheese, the gherkins, the like the bun, like the piece of bread in the middle. Like, it just works. I'm sorry.
Well, we're going to use the Big Mac as an example. If you have people that are coming in, or like it's describing their daily diet, which I'm sure some people like probably are not so honest all the time with you about what they eat. But if like you get the sense that this is like a daily thing, like what food, like you obviously have a big recipe, like a huge Rolodex of recipes that are healthy. But I mean, obviously somebody who's used to like just going in and getting a Big Mac, not only is it like delicious to them, but it's convenient, it's fast, it's cheap. Like how would, like what type of food or activity like would you recommend to help them transition out of that habit, especially if it's daily?
Well, first, let me address with that Big Mac there, Nat, because that is exactly the problem, because that Big Mac tastes so good and you can just pick it up and it just hits all those flavors inside your mouth and it's just like the perfect bite. And that's what we're up against to try to solve the health problems. When somebody takes a bite of a Big Mac, I mean, that first kind of high salt, high fat flavor just gets you. And so to try to compete with something like that is very, very difficult. That food is only made for flavor and not made at all for health. And so it's hard to compete with that. And so when somebody comes in and they say they eat the Big Mac, whether they're doing it every day or once a week, you know, I think kind of the first step is finding something that is going to work for them. So not everybody that comes into my office that has difficulty figuring out what the right thing to eat is gets fixed with the same solution or understands the same solution. So, you know, if we find something that works well. So if you have a soda every day, or if you have a Big Mac every day, I'm often not going to say just cut them out completely, because people don't often respond to that. So if you have a Big Mac every day, maybe we cut it out to, you know, three a week, and you make your lunch the rest of the days or something like that. We kind of start slow now.
Is that it? Three a week? Is that all I'm allowed? Come on, man.
I want to do a McDonald's mukbang. I want to have everything. I want to have chicken nuggets. Big Mac.
Oh, bye. I like the chicken nuggets with the sweet and sour sauce.
I'm sorry. I'm more of a Chick-fil-A person now.
Look, I've got a confession to make, though. My girlfriend said, you can have half my chicken wrap as well. And I was like, okay. But wait a minute. But I didn't eat the chips. Okay. I don't eat chips with a Big Mac because it's a ripoff. You buy a meal, it's a ripoff. Yeah. And I don't do the milkshakes because it's too many calories. Right. But I did have a soda. I had a Sprite.
Now, when you say chips,
fries. What'd you say? French fries, boy.
This is a confessional coming out. This is like a confessional podcast.
This is a confession,
the
yeah.
The real purpose of this now.
Serious. I feel really bad. I feel bad.
All right, Nat, let's tackle your eating habits then.
Recently, I've been having a lot of cakes and desserts and mango ice cream and stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's not easy once you get caught in a rut of eating a lot of unhealthy things. It takes a lot of work to undo some of those habits. You know, some of those things, when I see somebody who's 50, they've been eating the same way for 35, 40 years. And so we have to work slowly to unwind some of those patterns of what they like to eat, what they think tastes good. And it can take years, but you're better off doing that over a 5-year period and making it stick rather than kind of cutting everything off at once or going on a fad diet. And in 6 months, they're back to where they were before.
I'm not 50 yet for 5 years, 6 years, actually. However, I'm not making a habit of eating all these cakes, but I was on holiday, Blake. Yeah, come on.
Hey, I got nothing against that. Enjoyment on holiday, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So I know you're a positive guy, right? You're a really positive guy, yeah? So I've got a good question for you. We ask this one to everyone. Actually, Stanley Tucci, we didn't ask him because we didn't have these amazing questions at that time. But what... why does positivity matter to you, Blake?
Well, when I think about positivity, first of all, it's much easier to be positive when things are going well, right? And it's much easier to be positive if things aren't going well, if you know that you're able to deal with whatever the consequences is of things going totally wrong. And so that's kind of where I look at positivity, because deep down I'm a realist. Okay. So I can look at things and I see, I'm not going to be positive about things that don't have the capability of ending up with a positive outcome. Mm-hmm. But if I can look at something and say, well, even if things don't go the way I want, we're going to really make the best of it, and I'm going to get through this. It helps me get through any kind of situation that I find myself in. But again, if, when things are going well, staying positive is much easier. Everybody knows.
Very true. I have a spinoff question on that, because obviously, you know, in your line of work and dealing with people at all different stages of, you know, kidney disease and other issues, like, how do you navigate like realism and positivity if you're dealing with somebody that doesn't look like they're the future is not looking very bright based upon like their issue, their situation? Perhaps they're going to have to go to dialysis and it just doesn't look like it's going to be a positive outcome at this point. But so how do you navigate that when you're dealing with your patients?
That's a hard situation to be in. And in the course of my years as a doctor, you know, the amount of positivity that my patients can bring to a difficult situation is really, I mean, it's incredibly inspiring. It's mind-blowing the way you can talk to somebody and say that they're going to end up on dialysis and there's not much that I can do. And they will have a period of kind of understanding and maybe tears, but then, you know, they're ready. They say, when the time comes, I'm going to get through it. We're going to work towards a kidney transplant. You know, from my standpoint, I try to focus on how we're going to have quality of life and how your life is going to change with dialysis, but how we're going to focus on the things that are going to be positive in that life, because there are certain things that I can't change. And sometimes when people are developing kidney failure, no matter what I do or no matter what they do, things are just going to end up where we don't want them. And so if we kind of take that as a given, then we can really make the best of being on dialysis or getting a kidney transplant. And people are absolutely amazing in their ability to change their mindset and be positive about a really difficult situation.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine it's very tough. My godfather had a heart and two kidneys last year. Out in the States, yeah, out in California. He's from the UK, but he looks amazing. He said they had him running up and down hills, like it's incredible. Yeah, it's just incredible, really, what you can do now with medicine. But like, you know, your focus on diet is really, really good, really inspirational for people, I'm sure. And so, what is your personal positive superpower?
Can luck be a personal positive superpower?
Luck?
That's a good question.
I feel that a lot of the ability for me to be positive in my life comes from, I've really been very lucky. You know, I was born with great parents. I was born in a middle class family. I was able to go through medical school and do okay. You know, if I got into trouble, I got out of it okay. And that's allowed me to stay positive because I've been lucky. But, you know, if we're looking kind of beyond the luck, I think that, I think kindness towards people is probably the way that I approach most of my situations to try to keep them positive. And by, being kind and understanding where somebody is coming from, it really has the ability to take a situation and put a positive spin on it.
Super. Yeah, there's a thing that, you know, kind of just like the advantages of meeting people where they're at and just understanding that not everyone is going to be necessarily receiving the advice or the information at the same way that somebody else might. And just understanding, like, just being compassionate, I guess, like, understanding that not everybody is at this level. Well, even though when there's advantages of being at this level, but being willing to kind of take them through it, which I think your platform is really helpful at doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I totally agree.
So Nadia, I'm sure you've got a really in-depth question here for Blake.
Lots of in-depth questions. I mean, I think that, you know, already there's just so much that we're opening up here. But I mean, just by virtue of living where you live, I mean, you grew up in Maryland as I did, which, you know, Maryland is not too far behind South Carolina when it comes to these health issues. I grew up in Western Maryland. I grew up in a little town called Hagerstown, Maryland, where there is a huge obesity problem. I mean, probably, I mean, I hate to say it, but probably one in three people are obese, you know, maybe one in five are morbidly obese. I mean, it's like very pervasive.
Wow.
So, I mean, how would you say, like, what do you think the main issue is with America and particularly these smaller communities? Why is America struggling so hard with food and health?
So if you can figure that out for certain, Nadia, I think that's a Nobel Prize answer right there.
Right.
But I think there are some things that really that factor in. The one is, we talked about it a little earlier, the availability of processed foods and unhealthy foods, no matter where you go, whether you're in the supermarket or driving down the highway. I think also poverty is certainly a driver of obesity and poor health outcomes. If people don't have access to money, they don't have access to shelter, they don't have access to fresh food, they don't have a kitchen that they can cook in, they don't have somebody to care for their kids while they work, or they don't have a job. If you don't have those things available to you, then it's much more difficult to really focus on your own health. And those kind of things affect your stress levels. Stress levels can be a risk factor for obesity. And if you don't have that security, then oftentimes changing the focus onto your health and what you're eating and making sure that you can focus on those things becomes much more difficult. So I think it's a multifaceted problem, and I don't think there's one quick, easy answer to it.
Yeah, it's very true. I was thinking about privilege earlier. I was literally just talking about it earlier and how, you know, when I was immature and young, I used to think that everyone had the same privilege, the same opportunity. Yeah. But we don't. Like, we just don't. Yeah. Like, you know, there's the color thing, and then there's the poverty thing, and then there's the health thing, and they're all related, and it's very, very sad. Very sad.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that more people need to take control of their health. I mean, obviously, like when we look at second, third world countries and people who are in poverty, like they are emaciated. They're not morbidly obese. So, I mean, there is an issue here that we need to look at as a culture as well. I mean, it's just craziness. I mean, I forced myself to drop like almost 55 pounds as a 14-year-old. You know, like not many people can do that. I was, you know, shoving honey buns and donut sticks and all kinds of stuff down my throat. And I was like, I'm tired of being bullied. So I'm going to start walking the track 3 miles a day, you know? So I think we need more advocates like yourself out there that are kind of doling out this helpful, inspiring advice, but also, you know, not being afraid to be a little, giving a little bit of tough love as well. Do you consider yourself somebody that likes to give a little tough love? Do you ever give tough love to your patients when they're being resistant? Because you are a realist, you said, after all.
I am a realist, and I sometimes I do give tough love, you know, especially if I think that there are ways for that person to make changes in their in their diet or their health to really improve themselves. So, you know, if I see somebody who I think really can do better, who has the means to do it and the availability, but they're not, then certainly I can give a little tough love. I'm also very kind of an individualist though. And so I'll do the best I can. I'll tell you what I think is good. I'll give you a little bit of tough love. And then if you don't follow that or you're not able to, then when you come back in 3 months, I'll still give you the same care and we'll talk about it again. And I'll be positive about making that change at that time because I understand that if somebody doesn't make that change one time, it might not be the right period in their life to do it, but it may be 6 months later, the time comes. So sometimes I give a little bit of tough love. It's a fine line though, because you don't want to discourage somebody, and some people don't respond well to tough love. So, you know, if I see 30 patients in a day, it's, you have to really kind of navigate who's going to respond to what certain types of motivation.
Right. That's excellent.
Of course. Yeah. I'm a big believer in exercise, you know, exercise every day. Yeah. So important. But I think a lot of people are just caught up in, and they haven't found the exercise regime that they enjoy. And I think that's really unfortunate. It's sad for a lot of people, you know.
I call exercise, that's the only thing that I have as a miracle drug. It's really amazing. It even if a lot of people don't lose weight with exercise, but the way it helps your mental health and your joints and your strength is, I don't have any medicine that I can give that's as good as exercise 5 times a week.
Oh, yeah. It's a great way of releasing stress. Of course, out here in Vegas, where it's, you know, you're dealing with triple digits, and then you're dealing with gym closures and other things. You kind of got to create your own little space in your house, which of course can be a bit redundant, but better that than nothing at all, right?
Yeah, I just got a treadmill. I because I can't go to the gym, so I ordered a treadmill, and it basically takes up about half of my living room and looks horrendous. But what do you mean?
Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, I just started Tai Chi when I was 20, and I'm fortunate enough to have stuck at it for nearly 25 years, and that's just my, you know, my what, an hour, 2 hours a day exercise of choice, right? But
how often do you do it, Nat?
Every day.
It's great.
Yeah, it keeps me sane. Yeah, it means that when Natty is rude to me, it's okay. I can cope.
Right, deplete. You release that stress.
Yeah, look, I'm mirroring her head as well. Her head's this way. My head's this way. You see.
I expect you to mention
this. Exercise keeps me 100% sane.
Yeah.
I need it.
It sounds like you're doing a fantastic job over there, though. So, can you give some advice on these recipes? Like, what's your favorite recipe right now? Like a healthy salad, yeah, like some kind of salad.
Yeah, so I've been making, you know, it's summer here, so we've got lots of fresh tomatoes and cucumbers, and so I've been making a lot of cucumber tomato salads with a whole bunch of different dressings on them, some fresh basil. Been experimenting with some new spices, one called sumac. I don't know if you've ever cooked with sumac. Yeah.
No. What is that?
I think it's a ground berry, but it's used in Middle Eastern cooking, and it gives a little tang, little lemony tang to it. And so I make a little Mediterranean vinaigrette with sumac, lemon juice, red wine vinegar, olive oil, and a pinch of salt. And then it just goes over some freshly cut cucumbers, tomatoes, little onion, whatever herbs you have around. And it's fabulous. Sometimes I throw some chickpeas in there if you're looking for a plant-based meal.
Nice. I'm getting hungry now. I think maybe I might experiment with that.
Are you getting hungrier now than you were when we were talking about the Big Macs?
Much hungrier, yeah. Because, you know, I know there's no goodness in those things, but I enjoyed it. It's a memory, you see. This is what you're trying to break people away from, yeah? Is childhood memories of eating Big Macs, yeah? Because that burger has not changed in however many years, right? Like, my dad took me to have a Big Mac when I was like probably 10 years old. He comes from Connecticut, yeah? And you know, he came to America. We even had root beer here in England. Well, when I lived in England, we had root beer there. And he would order the root beer, but unfortunately, they stopped serving that. But, you know, I'm much hungrier thinking about better quality food, definitely. You know,
so that's exactly what I'm talking about, Nat, when I talk about change your buds. So, you know, those taste buds with that Big Mac are associated with those memories of childhood and that delicious bite. And other people have that around here, whether with fried chicken or macaroni and cheese. And so that first bite, that the taste buds just kind of bring that all together and breaking those patterns so that you now associate a healthier food with kind of the same nostalgic feeling is really one of the keys to building healthier eating habits to sustain you for the rest of your life.
Got it. I tell you, some of the food out here in Poland is incredible. Like, really, yeah. Like, they do this borscht soup, yeah, which is like a beetroot soup, right? Yeah. It is just amazing. And but
know
you can
borscht.
Put
I'm a Russian Jew. I
there
know.
You go, right? So you can put these noodles in there, yeah, like dumplings in there, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it is just wow. Like, incredible. People don't understand how good the Polish food is. Like, like the sauerkraut, I've got a whole new thing for sauerkraut, because one day you get the sauerkraut right and it's not that sour, yeah, but then you leave it in the fridge and it gets more and more sour, yeah. Incredible, really.
Yeah,
sounds amazing.
Like a delicious fusion of like Eastern Europe and like German, because Germany had such an influence and Poland, you know, obviously for bad reasons and for not so bad, but yeah. The food there as a result has become very interesting, like kind of a fusion,
yeah,
of flavors.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Ukrainian cooks, yeah, here. Ukrainian food,
they have like their own take on pierogies, I think.
Yeah, they do. That's the word, pierogi. Yeah. Amazing. Like, there are there's a wealth of really healthy food, but the problem is that they still like the cakes, and there are huge cake shops, and I mean literally everywhere I go, yeah, I just, and they're displayed really well, and you look through the window and you're like, oh yeah. And you can just imagine the sugar rush, right, when you stuff your face with that. But it's bad, right? It's bad
like,
for you.
Execute more self-control, though, over there. I mean, you don't really see a big obesity problem in Poland or other, you know, Eastern European countries. There probably are some people who are overweight, but it's not at the level of America. So, no. You know, no. I have another question for you, Blake, or actually kind of a question and a thought, because obviously, I mean, the whole reason you're doing the Change Your Buds movement and your website and all of these amazing things, the cooking doc, is really to amplify your reach, to get more people to understand the importance of healthy eating and to kind of ease them into this transition of a healthier lifestyle. So in this process, you actually have partnered up with the American Kidney Fund, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, nonprofits in America, really focusing on kidney health. Can you tell us a bit about that partnership and how you think this might lead to greater impact?
Sure. So the American Kidney Fund has a spot on their website that's called the Kidney Kitchen. And it's a really great resource for people with kidney disease, because it allows you to see where a recipe fits into your specific stage of kidney disease. Not only that, but the food tastes really good. They don't put just kind of junky recipes up there just for the sake of putting a recipe up there that's good for kidney health. So I think that by working together with them, we can really amplify the message, and I can put some of my recipes up there to show people that eating well can not only improve your kidney health, but it can taste good. I think that's the bottom line. The food that we're putting up there tastes good and is good for your health. And the combination of their reach to people all across the United States and my knowledge about healthy cooking and how to make food taste good, as well as my understanding as a kidney doctor about kind of the basic science of things, I think is going to be an amazing combination, which I hope really starts to change the trajectory of kidney disease in the United States. Because right now there are 37 million people in the U.S. who have kidney disease, and that number continues to grow. And Whoa. The earlier on that we can hit that, people with early stage kidney disease, getting them to eat healthier food and really focus on stopping the progression of their kidney disease is going to be hopefully really beneficial for everybody out there.
Can I just, I've got a question, right? I know it's not in the pre-prepared questions, so I'm sorry about that. But I just want to know what the main causes of kidney disease and also kidney problems are. Like, what would you encourage people to do on a daily basis to look after their kidney health?
So the two main causes of kidney disease are high blood pressure and diabetes. Diabetes is certainly number one. And that is why the focus on healthy eating is so important, because if you can catch diabetes either by preventing it or by maintaining good control from the very beginning, you may be able to significantly lower the incidence of kidney disease. But kidney disease can be caused by a whole lot of things. There are genetic factors involved. There are medications that can cause kidney problems. But diabetes is the big one. Hypertension under that, high blood pressure. And a lot of these things can be managed with diet. And the tricky thing about kidney disease, if we're going to talk about it, is that there are really no symptoms until it gets near the end stages. So there are five stages of kidney disease, and people often don't have any symptoms until they get to stage four or even stage five, when it's too late.
Wow.
So things like screening for people at risk for kidney disease is incredibly important, with a blood test or a urine test if you have diabetes or high blood pressure or a family member with kidney disease. And so if we can catch it earlier and focus on diet as a means to prevent things from getting bad, that's where I think a lot of this stuff comes in.
What percentage of your patients would you say present a pre-existing issue like a high blood pressure or diabetes?
90 to 95%.
Wow. That is incredible.
Wow.
I mentioned earlier that my dad is doing really, really well with his kidney disease, and he actually had neither of those pre-existing conditions. So definitely in the minority of sufferers, and perhaps that is why he was able to really kind of self-medicate, if you will, with food at a, you know, much easier level perhaps than those who have these other underlying conditions. But I do believe he was at like stage three or something like that when he discovered that he had it. And now with his recent testing, they said it's practically like unnoticeable. So
that's wow. That's amazing. You know, one of the things, Nadia, that I think about people like your dad who have stage three kidney disease, which is relatively early on in the progression. But you know, I think about kind of the way I used to handle people with kidney disease like your dad had before I really understood how this stuff works. I saw a patient probably about 8 to 10 years ago, and she was right in the same level where your dad was. And she was looking to me for changes in her diet that she could make to really help kind of either reverse her kidney disease or prevent it from getting worse. And at that time, I didn't have anything to tell her. I basically told her, you eat a low sodium diet and you're good to go. And she fired me. She wanted more than that. She wanted more than that. She was so unhappy with the advice I gave her. And for years, I thought that she was in the wrong. But then kind of as I've learned more about diet and the way it affects kidney disease, I've learned that I should have given her much more than what I gave her.
Right.
And so it's important.
Right.
Because I guess it's so straightforward, like, you know, get on a low sodium diet. What is it called? The DASH? Would you say it's called the DASH diet, or just
DASH diet is great? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but then it's like someone who's doesn't even understand like sodium or like how to identify it or what foods might like naturally carry it or anything. They're just like, oh, what? Like, what do I do?
Yeah. But then, so basically we're talking about two things to attempt to look after your kidneys, right? We're saying diet, exercise. Yeah. And with diet, we're talking about drinking a lot of water, and we're talking about keeping the sodium levels, the salt intake low, right? And eating lots of fruits and vegetables and healthy proteins with some carbs and whatever, right? Like it's no more complicated than that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So exactly. A couple things on that. One is that what's good for your kidneys, especially in the early stages of kidney diseases, is the same thing that's good for the rest of your body. So you eat in a healthy way, just like you said, fruits and vegetables, watch the animal protein, whole grains, those kind of things are great for your kidneys, just like they're great for your heart and your brain and your gut health. So it's very similar. The other thing is when we talk about drinking water, so people, there's this whole thing out there about drinking eight ounce glasses of water a day. And you really don't need that for your kidney health. And I see that you're taking a nice little sip of water there. It's perfect.
So I couldn't help it.
Right. The more we're talking. But the key with drinking is to make sure you're drinking mostly water. So it's not necessarily that you need to drink eight ounce glasses of water a day, but that you don't go for the sugar sweetened beverages as a substitute for those water.
Ah,
that's where people get into big trouble.
Okay, that's very helpful. So what about drinking tea? Because we love tea.
Tea, good for you, especially unsweetened tea. You know, down here in the south of the United States, they serve iced tea and it's with tons of sugar in it. So that not so much, but regular tea and black coffee, they just keep showing study after studies of black coffee show that it's good for your health, especially your kidneys. So drink up.
That's interesting. So I've heard that the tea actually can replace the water in your water intake. Is that correct? Or do you need water on top of the tea?
No, I think for the most part, unsweetened tea, especially if it doesn't have, if it's not one of the really high caffeinated teas, then that water in that tea can certainly hydrate you. You know, I suggest people at least have a couple glasses of plain water a day, but tea is absolutely hydrating.
Super, super. So I've got another question here for you, believe it or not.
All right.
Let's see. So why do you think so many, I mean, you've covered a little bit about this, but why do you think so many Americans struggle with their health? And how can we motivate them to make a collective shift, do you think?
So, you know, I often think about a couple patients that I saw, because I think the answer is complicated. And I don't think that it's a one-size-fits-all answer for people. So, you know, I had a couple of cousins that I remember from about five years back. Their fathers were brothers, and both of their fathers had kidney failure. We ended up on dialysis. So both of these cousins were at high risk for kidney disease and ending up on dialysis. And so they came to see me early on in their stages of kidney disease. And the first one really was able to make a ton of changes to his diet. He and his whole family decided that they were motivated and ready to do it. And his kidney disease really kind of flattened, stayed stable. And that was through talking about avoiding the processed foods and the fast foods and the things that were really getting him into trouble. And what I think really gets a lot of people in the United States into trouble, in addition to those kind of social determinants of health, like poverty that we talked about. But his cousin didn't do that. And he didn't do it because I think it was his mother got sick. And so when his mom got sick, then his wife had to take care of his mom, and they lost another source of income. They lost some caregiving at home. He had to do everything he could to keep food on the table. And so he went out and he worked 70 hours a week as a truck driver to support people because he didn't have any other help. And when he did that, he didn't take his medicines all the time. Sometimes he couldn't afford his medicines. He couldn't come see me. And his outcome was much different than mine. And so, you know, if we think about kind of, I'm sorry, his outcome was much different than his cousin's. Who ended up doing fine. This guy ended up on dialysis. And so when we think about the whole United States and really trying to focus on how to make a healthier movement, a healthier change, if we don't change the whole culture where people do not have healthy food kind of put in front of them at an affordable cost and the time to make the healthy food and the support for their family that they need. I think it's going to be a tough battle, Nadia, and a tough battle, Nat.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, and just right now, with there's so much stress and, you know, affecting the world, but, you know, particularly in the United States and particularly in some of these more rural areas where, you know, there's a lot of push and pull and back and forth. You don't really know what's happening with the pandemic and everything else. So it's really, you know, people are going to turn to things that comfort them.
That's very true. But I wanted to, let me say something really positive, because I think that that I have seen people make changes in difficult situations in their diet. And I've been down in South Carolina 11 years, and the knowledge that people have now compared to when I started about how to eat healthy, how to eat plant-based foods, the options in the grocery stores, and even at some of the restaurants is healthier than it used to be. And so I really do think that we're making progress by offering people the opportunity and the knowledge to eat healthier food. So it may sound that like I think things are really difficult, but I think that we've made a ton of progress. And I think that there is a way to get people healthier.
Yep, absolutely. And I think people are willing to open up and try and figure out a way to change, particularly, you know, when you're looking at, when you did a live, for example, with the American Kidney Fund, and just seeing all of the people like asking questions and really enthusiastic about the information you were providing. So I certainly think that you're really on the right track to getting people into a better mindset around food.
I hope so. I find that people really do want to change, and they really do want to do the things that are good for their health. We just have to give them the education, the tools, and the opportunity to make it happen.
Yep.
Yeah. What a fantastic purpose you have. I think it's great, you know, really super.
Thanks, Matt. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Do you have any parting words for us, Blake, that you want to leave with the audience about, you know, maybe one action item that someone could implement in their life today to feel a little bit healthier and on a better track with their eating?
Sure. So, you know, if you're struggling with how to eat healthy food or what changes to make in your diet, take a step back. And most people can see one habit that is not working for them, whether or not that's stopping at the gas station for breakfast or stopping at McDonald's for lunch and having a Big Mac, or it's having a donut, or it's having a soda every afternoon. So rather than trying to overhaul everything at once, why don't you pick one of those habits and work on that for the next 6 months and really try to see if you can conquer that one. Find something to substitute for that habit that's healthy. And once you can kick that habit that's making your health go in the wrong direction, then you can have the confidence and know that you have the ability to make even more changes to work on bettering your health over time.
Absolutely super. Well, thank you. It's been really, really interesting. I don't think there's enough information about this, and we will drop some links to your website and obviously this movement, this Change Your Buds movement that you're behind, right? And I'm sure Natty has got a load of links.
Yep, absolutely. You want to shout out your website, Blake?
Sure. Check out my website. It's thecookingdoc.co. And I've got lots of healthy recipes on there, videos teaching you about how to incorporate healthier habits into your daily life. We usually have a new recipe or a new tip once a week with a video. So make sure you sign up for my newsletter, subscribe to my YouTube channel, also Facebook and Instagram. We'd love to see you on there. I think that we can really help you make a difference.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And as Nat said, we'll be leaving all those links for everybody so you can easily find Blake and reach out with any of your questions. Nat, do you have any parting words on your side?
No. It's been a pleasure. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Positive Personal Power. Do subscribe via your favorite podcasting app and please leave us a 5-star review. Or sign up on our website, positivepersonalpower.net, for weekly emails and updates, and do share our episodes with your friends and on social media. Feel free to reach out anytime.